Hi, my name is Akshita and welcome to the fourth episode of the India Forum's new podcast series, TIF Talkies. This season, we've been discussing the ongoing farmers' protests, and so far we've addressed how the new farm laws have tackled the MSP, mandi rules, and changing ecologies. Today, we'll be in conversation with Dr. Satendra Kumar to discuss the politics of the ongoing farmers' protests. Dr. Kumar teaches sociology at G.B. Pant Social Science Institute, University of Allahabad, and is a fellow at IIAS Shimla. His research investigates how marginalized groups engage with politics and the state in contemporary India. Dr. Kumar, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Akshita. It is a pleasure to be here.
So to start with, Dr. Kumar, the farmers' protests, which have continued for over a year now, have been consistently accused of being anti-BJP or anti-national. They've also been called a conspiracy orchestrated by the opposition. But this discontent amongst the farmers has not been new. Could you explain why this time around the farmers have been so determined and steadfast in their demands to be heard?
When farmers' protests started in July last year in 2020 in Punjab, they were against the three farm laws. In fact, if we want to understand them better, we should call them agriculture market laws. These laws were passed by the union government surreptitiously, in haste, without proper consultation and talking to all stakeholders, including ordinary farm union and their leaders. That is where and how contestation began. What is important to note that agriculture markets such as mandis and haats have been existed in different regions and states in different forms and had been regulated by the state specific law. So far, the agriculture markets have been the state subject. There was no single law to regulate the agriculture markets. This is the first time when union government set to unify these varied and the state-specific agriculture markets by a single law, or what we are calling the three-blanket law, which is one size fits all, while completely disregarding regional specificities of the Indian agriculture. So if we look at local markets, we find that farmers and traders have been contesting the state-specific policies all the time, all these years. This time, the union government is stepped over and force the single law across the states. Thus, when farmers coming to Delhi to protest against the three laws, these protests sounds like anti-union government, which is headed by the BJP. The farmers have not been anti-BJP, but against the three laws, which ignore their state-specific demands and problems. More importantly, it is also true that union government has not been compassionate or benign and totally neglected farmers' demands and fears. This time, fear is bigger than before. Farmers' fear is that they will lose their land, which means not only their livelihood, but also identity and heritage. They fear that corporate capital will take over their land. Moreover, these laws will also disintegrate the public distribution system, which will harm landless laborers and marginalized sections in rural India. And that is why a large number of laborers also have joined the farmer movement. In this background, we can understand why the farmers have so determined in their demands.
So, are the farmers' protests something new and exceptional to this current regime, as you know, it's often been referred to as? And would it be possible for you to give a brief overview of the history of the farmers as an organized social group?
Thank you. This is again a very, very interesting question. No, farmers' protests are not exceptional to this current regime. In fact, farmer protests have a long history in India across regions. For instance, peasant mobilizations of the early 20th century were about the question of land and were directed against the existing land system. These movements were transformative and aimed to change the exploitative social and economic structures of the Indian countryside. And I'm sure many people know that Tabhaga, Telangana and Bardoli peasants are some of the famous ones where peasants fought against the exploitative system and demanded their rights and land rights, so on and so forth. Later on, even after independence, the fight continued and farmers kept demanding, you know, land reforms, land to tillers. The new culmination of the farmer movement happened in 1970s and 80s, and these farmers' mobilizations were called and termed as a new farmers movement. The leader of these movements in 70s and 80s preferred to call their mobilization a non-political movement. Americans, while having, of course, their own politics. They demanded higher price of their crops. The farmers' movement of the 1980s were revolved around the question of price. So while earlier movements were addressing the question of land, this time the question of price became more important in 1970s and 80s. They were concerned mainly about higher crop prices and subsidies for the inputs such as fertilizers and electricity. The new farmers' movements were mobilized by rich farmers of the dominant castes, such as Jats in western UP, Marathas of Maharashtra, and Wakaligas of Karnataka, and were organized around the idea of Bharat versus India, as Sir Joshi of the Setkari Sangathan framed it. For instance, in western UP, the Bharatiya Kisan Union, under the leadership of late Mahendra Singh Tikhat, organized several protest movements for cheaper electricity and higher crop prices. In January 1988, thousands of farmers picketed the district commissioner office in Meerut for over 3 weeks. Among their demands were the waiving of power and water bills, writing of loans, and higher prices for sugar cane. The Meerut protest was followed by the historic Boat Club rally in Delhi in October the same year, when hundreds of thousands of farmers with tractors and trolleys laid siege to the Boat Club lawns near Parliament in the heart of Delhi and paralyzed the city center for more than a year. The BKU and its farmer supporters were not peasants in the classical sense, but agricultural entrepreneurs who produced for market. They hired labor for farm production, benefited from government subsidies and agriculture policies which pushed for the Green Revolution, or I may call it early industrial agriculture, which has turned out to be detrimental to farm economy, environment and rural society, and has created today's agrarian crisis. Majority of the protesters in the ongoing farmer protest are the victims of the state push and policies for the Green Revolution. That is, I want to underline. The current wave of protest, I would call the third movement of farmers' mobilization, which focuses on mandi, market, MSP. By these protests, farmer citizens are demanding from the state to protect farmers' interest, and to create level playing field for everyone.
You have previously written about how the farmers' protests have revived farmer identity. Could you elaborate on what this means, both in general and also for the future of state politics of, say, Uttar Pradesh?
Very pertinent question, Akshita. Yes, I would say that the ongoing farmers' protests have revived farmers' identity. These protests have brought back farm issues at the forefront of the national politics. More than after two decades, the farmer protests have also renewed the agrarian politics, which were very influential during the 1970s and 80s, as I pointed out before, but lost its force in 1990s and onwards, when caste and communal politics took over regional and national politics. I will take examples from Western UP region, where I have done fieldwork for more than a decade. From the 1960s onward, Chaudhary Charan Singh organized the Jats and other middle castes such as Gujars, Yadavs around their shared identity as Kisan. He founded the Bharatiya Kranti Dal, BKD, in 1967 and later the Bharatiya Lok Dal, BLD, and pushed for land reforms that benefit the middle farming caste. During his two brief terms as Chief Minister of UP in 1967 and 1970, he enacted several policies in the farming interest, including input subsidies for irrigation and electricity, that established him as an undisputed leader of landowning middle caste under the homogenized category of Kisan, or you can call farmer. Charan Singh continued to strongly articulate the interest of big and middle farmers during his tenure as Prime Minister in 1979, until he was defeated by the Congress Party. Thereafter, his political career and farmers' mobilization under his leadership gradually declined. After Charan Singh, this political vacuum was filled by the BKU that led the farmers' movement in 1980s. I'll come back to this point later in the next question. First, let me tell how the farmer politics decline, agrarian politics decline in UP, and how it's coming back. Since the 1990s, farmer politics lost its force due to two interconnected phenomena: the introduction of neoliberal reforms and the rise of caste-based and communal political parties, while neoliberal reforms deepened the ongoing agrarian crisis by cutting farm subsidies. Communal politics reduced the salience of farmer-based politics. The communal politics of the Samajwadi Party and Bahujan Samajwadi creates conditions amenable to communal politics of Bharatiya Janata Party. Caste-based mobilization by the Samajwadi Party and Bahujan Samajwadi Party cut into a common Kisan identity. The national elections of the 2014 and 2019 and the 2007-17 UP legislative elections brought the Hindu nationalist BJP government to power at the national and state level. These elections produce a new political leadership in UP, representing the generation of upward mobile Jat, Gujars and Yadavs, who are salesmen, insurance agents and field supervisors, so on and so forth, and do not want to associate with the farmer politics. And in fact, they were looking for the New India slogan. This generation wants something different and more respectable than agriculture, which they consider doomed. However, the low-paid and insecure character of the jobs they can find and their inability to meet minimum living conditions and lead a respectful life in a city has disenchanted this upward aspiring class of these middle classes, middle caste, who continue to depend on resources from their holdings in the village. In these conditions, and despite their urban aspiration, land continues to be an integral part of their family livelihood and identity. Land gives them a sense of security, even when they work in non-farm economy and in cities. Several other proximate factors set the stage for broad participation in farmers' movement and protest, thereby acting as a catalyst in revival of farmers' identity. So basically, the disenchantment with the urban jobs or lack of employment have, you know, working as a catalyst for this revival of farmers' identity. In addition to the continued agrarian distress, the doubling of electricity charges, the rising cost of diesel and fertilizers, and the unpaid dues of sugar mills to cane farmers have severely affected farmers across generation, caste, and religious lines. Furthermore, in UP, the Yogi Adityanath-led BJP government's stringent anti-cattle slaughter measures have devastated the already broken farmers as stray cattle, without favoring any caste or religion, plunder and ruin the crops. Further, the COVID-19 epidemic not only struck another blow to the rural economy, but highlighted the fragility of urban life and the ways in which young people, both men and women, at lower ranks of the economic ladder, still depend on the farm and their rural connections. The most surprising Jat Muslim alliance in these protests has also been facilitated by reckoning with the fallout of the 2013 Muzaffarnagar riots. After that violent episode, Jat farmers had great difficulty in hiring agricultural labor, since a large number of Muslim artisans and service caste were displaced by the arson and looting and left the villages. Most important, the fear of being killed by each other when out at night in the fields for agriculture work had devastated both communities. These everyday hardships changed their perception about each other. The realization that they need each other compelled farmer leaders across caste and religion to organize joint Hindu-Muslim farmer panchayat in 2000. And that is how this everyday compulsion started bringing people together, both communities, labor and farmers. I would repeat it that current wave of protests are able to build a broader alliance, which has a great potential to change the UP politics. These protests are gradually shifting to the political discourse from the divisive to more inclusive one, where vulnerable sections will have more voices. Certainly, a broader farmers' identity is being revived, and a broader alliance across caste, class, gender, and religion has been taking place.
The protests, as you may know, Dr. Kumar, have often been criticized on the ground that the farmers are only of a certain class from a particular part of the country and do not speak for the rest of the 80% of small and marginal farmers, which are from marginalized caste backgrounds. Is this so? Are the protests really representative of the farmers' concerns at large? Or let me rephrase the question, are the farmers really united?
Thank you, Akshita. Yes, farmers are getting together. As I mentioned earlier, that most of the protesters are the victims of Green Revolution pushed by the union and state government during the 1960s and 70s in the northwestern region. And the farmers of this region are taking lead in this protest. But farmers of the other regions are also raising their voices and supporting these protests. For instance, in 2019 and in the early 2020, in Maharashtra and other regions, thousands of farmers took out protest marches and drew attention of media and public. Thus, farmer protests have been there and continuously emerging across regions, but in different forms and having different socio-economic composition of the protesters. More importantly, according to the Indian Government Agriculture Survey of 2015, about 85% rural households account for small and marginal farmers. And this is very well reflected on the composition of the protesters. This is quite clear by now that these farm bills threaten the interest of laborers as well as farmers, and particularly small farmers who are now in majority in the countryside. Many small farmers have been facing economic hardship and gradually becoming migrant laborers. Structurally, the rural India is well set for a broad alliance of marginalized sections whose numbers are growing day by day. As the agriculture report published by the Government of India shows that 79% of rural households and 60% of farming households own less than a hectare land. You can see the calamity. This clearly indicates that most Indian farmers cannot survive from the land alone and have to work as wage laborers as well. The overlapping economic concerns of laborers, farmer laborers and struggling small farmers who fear the loss of their land have the potential to unite them. In spite of divisive caste ideologies, these ongoing processes have brought together larger rural population and uniting them against the new farm laws, which push unregulated corporate capital in the countryside. My field study also shows that farmer protesters have created a broader alliance and social base across regions, caste, class and religion. The ongoing farmer protests have become an all-India movement.
Thank you, Dr. Kumar. So this brings me to my last question. The stalemate between the government and the farmers is nowhere nearer to finding a compromise, and both tensions and violence seems to be on the rise. How can the farmers best achieve their goals given the situation, and do you think a sort of an amicable solution can even be reached at this point?
Thank you. Your last question is very important, Akshita. Look, the union government is so adamant and is not willing to repeal the three laws. This has created a stalemate between the government and the farmers. This is very unfortunate. Moreover, the BJP IT cells is maligning the farmers' image and disrupting the protest by spreading false information and fake news by labeling farmers as anti-national or, you know, sometimes labeling them pro-Khalistanis. In this scenario, it is hard to reach any compromise. The government must have shown compassion to its farmer citizens who had been the victims of the government policies of the Green Revolution and would have designed policies taking into account of regional differences and complexities, particularly by providing special packages to the farmers of northwestern region and encouraging them to change their agricultural practices from monocrop to multicrop system. Government can persuade them to diversify their agriculture and mix it environmentally sustainable. Instead of imposing the single or these three blanket laws, which is one size fits all. And most importantly, agriculture should be left to the states. By now, it's clear that the farmer protests are not merely about the farm laws, but they have also about environment and gender injustices. Farmer protests are also taking up issues of rising rural inequalities. They are against corporate capital and the divisive politics. Thus, farmers' protests are in the making of inclusive nation, India, and have a great potential to change the political discourse and language at this moment of Indian history.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kumar. This brings us to the end of the episode. It was really great to hear you and incredibly insightful as well. Thank you so much for taking out the time to be here with us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to our listeners as well. Do stay tuned in for the next episode, which will also be the concluding episode for this season, where we will be talking to Mr. Ajay Veer Jakar. Thank you.